strong interaction and the hadron spectrum. So last class, I wrote down a whole long list of all of the lightest states, the baryonic states, the meson states. And what I argued is you can very clearly see by looking at their decays which ones are decaying through strong interactions. Those are the ones that have lifetimes of order 10 to the minus 26 seconds. They decay very quickly. But there are other decays which happen a lot more slowly, either through electromagnetic interactions involving photons, or the slowest ones are the ones involving the weak interaction, which have lifetimes of order 10 to the minus 10 or so seconds. So this pointed to the existence of new symmetries, which we can think about, symmetries of the strong interaction, which are not conserved through other interactions. But since the spectrum of hadrons is predominantly determined by the strong interaction, it's useful to think about these symmetries as approximate symmetries of the theory. So now the question is, where do these symmetries come from? So we're going to see how they arise starting from the standard model. So I'll just write down the standard model for quarks, just for light quarks. The Lagrangian will be sum over q, where I'm just including u, ds. And then we have the quark fields q bar I d slash minus mq q. And then we have the gluon part, which is 1/2 trace of g mu nu g mu nu. OK. So g is the gluon field. D is the covariant derivative. So d slash, or let me just write d mu, is d by d mu. And the strong interaction part is I g s t a g a mu plus dot dot dot. The dot 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 is electromagnetic interactions, weak interactions. We're mainly just going to worry about the strong interaction, and so I'm just going to keep this term. And then TA, of course, is the generator of SU3. MQ is the quark mass. So for light quarks, or I should say for hadrons made from light quarks, the hadron mass comes predominantly from QCD. So those quarks with masses MQ much, much less than the QCD scale, lambda QCD, can be taken to be effectively degenerate. So if the quarks are very light, it doesn't actually matter what their mass is. For technical reasons, I don't want to take them to be massless, although you could think about that limit. I'm just going to assume that they're all just going to be degenerate. That'll be good enough. So I'm going to, instead of MQ, I'm going to just replace this by a common mass, M0. Why don't I want to just take this to 0?
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to derive what the symmetry is. And the symmetry comes from the fact that for the light quarks, they're effectively degenerate, or their masses are very light, compared to the scale of QCD, which is setting the masses of the hadrons that they're making up. So that's the idea. Now you can see, obviously, for the heavy quarks, charm and bottom, this approximation doesn't hold. And so this argument is not going to hold for C and B, but it holds for the lighter quarks, U, D, and S. So now if I write a common mass term for all of the quarks, I can write the Lagrangian for those quarks in a way that makes a symmetry very clear. So I'm going to define a three-component multiplet, which is just Q. And this is the U field, the D field, and the S field. So I'm putting the three flavors in one big component, and it's called Q. Yeah, the notation is a little degenerate with the notation up there. There, Q is the individual fields for each quark. Here, it's a three-component object containing all three fields. So it's a triplet of quark flavor. So now, in terms of this triplet, I can write the Lagrangian as Q bar I B slash minus M naught times the identity. The identity is just 1, 1, 1 in flavor space acting on this triplet. And then I have Q. And then I have the QCD part, which doesn't change. OK. So now I've written it in this symmetric way. I should say the covariant derivative is also proportional to the identity in flavor space as well. G mu nu doesn't depend on flavor at all. So there's a symmetry here where I can do a unitary rotation among the three flavors and the Lagrangian's invariant. So the Lagrangian is invariant under a unitary transformation. It's an SU3 transformation. So it's called SU3. It's not color SU3. It's called SU3 flavor. You're not transforming in red, green, blue, the colors of one quark. You're transforming in the flavors of the different quarks. So these, you're doing a transformation in flavor for quarks of the same color. So it's totally orthogonal to color. Don't get confused. So here's the transformation. You just do Q goes to U times Q, where U is the SU3 matrix. OK. So it's probably pretty obvious that this Lagrangian is invariant under this transformation. I just want to give you one example of an interaction that's not invariant. If I wrote down electromagnetic interactions in this language, so let me write down the interaction for electromagnetism. It would be Q bar. Q again is this UDS, and then I have a matrix Q, Q times the electric charge, and then I have A slash, and then Q. So now the charges, I can also think as a matrix in flavor space. So it's this matrix Q, which is 2/3 minus 1/3 minus 1/3. It's just a diagonal matrix containing the charges of UDS. And you can see this interaction is not invariant, because if I do this rotation here, I'll just get a Q dagger here and a Q here. And I can't just commute the U dagger through the Q, because it doesn't commute. So it's not invariant. So electromagnetic interactions violate the SU3 flavor symmetry. And also weak interactions do as well. You can write down exactly the same thing for weak interactions. And those also violate the symmetry. So that's how you see when things do violate the symmetry. Oops. Now you might be a little bit concerned because I told you this approximation only works when the quark masses are much, much lighter than lambda QCD. For the U quark and the D quark, their masses are a few MeV. That's fine. But for the strange quark, the mass is around 100 MeV. And so you might get nervous. So that's fine. So we'll consider the strange quark separately later on, but I just want to make a note. MS is comparable to lambda QCD. But of course, the U and D quarks are much lighter. So if you like, you can think about the strange quark mass as also something that's going to violate a little bit the symmetry, this SC3 flavor symmetry. But there's a subgroup of the flavor symmetry, just rotating the U and D quarks, which is going to be a much better symmetry, since those two really are approximately massless or degenerate. Okay, so SU2 subgroup acting on only U and D should be a better symmetry. Also approximate, since again, this interaction, the electromagnetic interactions also violate the SU2 as well, but in terms of the masses, this should be a better symmetry, since M and MU and MD are both very light. This subgroup here is isospin. So this is isospin. Okay. So better symmetry than SU3 flavor. This you could also call SU2 flavor. All right. So we know how quarks transform under the symmetry, but quarks are not, of course, asymptotically free states. We need to know what happens when you combine quarks into hadrons and how those hadrons transform under the symmetry. So we're going to introduce some new ideas. So we're going to talk about something called Young tableau. And irreducible representations. So you guys learned a little bit about Young tableau yesterday in tutorial, is that right? Okay. Did it make sense?
No?
Yes and no, okay. All right, so we're going to talk about it in a little bit more detail to try to justify it a little bit. And so I apologize if I'm telling you things that you already learned, but hopefully this will be useful. So let's start with a single quark. So a single quark Q is just UDS. It transforms just how he wrote down. What you call this is a fundamental representation of SU3. So just to be very clear, so this is also known as a 3. It's a triplet. That's why it's called a 3. Just to be clear, I'll write out the transformation in indices. It's QI goes to UIJ QJ. Anything that transforms this way is a fundamental. Do you have a question? No, okay. Now we can also talk about antiquarks. So we have just one antiquark. Yeah, Q bar is U bar, D bar, S bar. How does that transform? We need U dagger instead of U. So it will transform as U bar goes to U bar, U dagger. Or in indices, we would write Q bar I goes to UIJ star Q bar J. OK. This is the anti-fundamental representation because it transforms with U star, not with U. And it's also called a 3 bar. So of course, it's a three-dimensional representation. It has three components, but it transforms with U star instead of U. So it's just called antifundamental. All right. So that's the basics. Now what we want to do is figure out what happens when we combine multiple quarks together. So let's start out with the simplest case. Let's just combine two quarks. So we're going to consider a state called a diquark. There's no diquark in nature, of course, right? You can't have QQ, but this is just a starting point. And I'm going to do something which you probably won't like, is I'm going to assume that the two quark states are distinguishable, so I'm not going to worry about anti-symmetrizing any wave functions, okay? That will come later. So I'll consider two quarks, which are distinguishable. We're just dealing with how the group theory works, not worrying about quantum mechanics. So I'm going to call one of the quarks Q1, and it's going to have a flavor index I. And the other quark will be QJ, and it will have flavor. It'll have some label 2 and flavor index J. How does this transform? Well, I just do U, I, K, U, J, L, Q, 1, K, Q, 2, L. So, okay, very easy. You're just transforming the two quarks independently. So anything that transforms this way is it's just a product of two fundamental representations. So I can write this representation as 3 cross 3. So that's the group theory way to represent it. There are, of course, 9 possible states, right? Because you can have 9 possible indices here, 1, 2, and 3, and 1, 2, and 3. 3 times 3 is 9. And so this representation, when I write it like this, exactly counts the number of states in the representation. So I'll just write it like this, is equal to 9 states in the representation. All right. But this particular representation, the 3 times 3, is not what we call an irreducible representation. It's actually a reducible representation. What that means is that it can be decomposed into two different sub representations, which don't mix with one another when you do a symmetry transformation. If a representation doesn't mix with any other states, it's irreducible. So it can be decomposed. Into two lower dimension representations, which are irreducible. So how do we do that? Well, the two things that you do is you just have to take the symmetric part and the anti-symmetric part. And what we'll see is the anti-symmetric and the symmetric parts won't mix with one another, and so they will form by themselves separate representations, making up the 3 times 3. So let's do the symmetric representation. So I'm going to consider Q1i, Q2j, plus Q1j, Q2i. And how does this transform? Well, so I just use exactly the same transformation rule. And I can use the fact that I can swap the k and the l indices. And what I get is u I k u j l q 1 k q 2 l plus q 1 l q 2 k. So just using this rule, we can write the transformation law like this. Now the key point is that if I started with a symmetric Q1 and Q2, I end up with a symmetric Q1 and Q2. And so the symmetric representation doesn't mix. It's symmetric when you start, transform it, and it's still symmetric. Oops. Now we can do the same thing for the anti-symmetric representation. So that's Q1i, Q2j, minus Q1j, Q2i. And this has a similar looking transformation law, uik, ujl, and then q1k, q2l, minus q1l, q2k. So again, when I start with something antisymmetric, I transform it, I get something antisymmetric out. So the symmetric and the antisymmetric representations don't mix with one another, and so that's what I mean that they are irreducible. So I can decompose the diquark in terms of the two irreducible representations, one is symmetric and one is antisymmetric. So the symmetric representation, we can count the dimensions. There's only six possible choices for I and j, because I and j have to be the same. If I have 1 and 2, it has to be the same as 2 and 1. So there's six possible choices for what I can do. So it's a six-dimensional representation. For the antisymmetric representation, there's only three possible choices. I can do 1 and 2, 1 and 3, and then 2 and 3. And that's it. So there's only three possible states, and so it's a three-dimensional representation. All right. So what I can write is that my original diquark representation, which is 3 times 3, is equal to two irreducible representations, a 6 and a three-dimensional representation. Before I write this down, let me discuss the antisymmetric representation a little bit more. You can write it, yeah?
When you do with tensors, like I noticed something particular four dimensions, but you have usually like symmetric, antisymmetric, and within the symmetric ones, you also have the symmetric and trace free. And that's irreducible. Like the trace part is also like that, it's a irreducible part. Do you have the same thing here?
Yes, I think you do. So so for SU3, let's see. For certain representations, it does decompose like that. So when we talk about the adjoint representation, it does decompose as the trace part and the trace-free part. When we talk about the symmetric representation, it does not decompose that way, because the trace part should be included in the six-dimensional representation. It doesn't always work the same way. OK. So for the antisymmetric representation, you can actually write it in a more compact form using the epsilon tensor, since that will automatically encode the antisymmetry in these indices. So I can, instead of writing this, I can write epsilon ijk q1j q2k. So now, instead of having two indices, I can write it in terms of just a one index object. And now let's see how this one transforms. So I'll just transform it. We get epsilon ijk, and then I have a ujm, ukn, q1m, q2n. All right. So now let's go a little further. Remember, I told you that the epsilon tensor with n indices is invariant under SUn. So for the case of SU3, epsilon ijk is invariant under SU3. What that means is that epsilon ijk times uil ujm UKN is equal to epsilon LMN. So that's what I mean. If I do an SU3 transformation on these indices altogether, I just get back the epsilon tensor. So I can use this just by multiplying by a U star on both sides. And so this relation implies that epsilon IJK UJM UKN is equal to UIL star epsilon LMN. So it's straightforward to show that once you believe this, then automatically you can show this. So now I can reuse this relation to express this right-hand side as a UIL star epsilon LMN and then Q1M Q2N. Okay. So the point of going through this exercise is to show you that the anti-symmetric representation transforms as a one component object, and it transforms using U star. That means it's the anti-fundamental representation. So this anti-symmetric representation of the diquark is also the three bar. So this is the three bar representation. So now, in terms of decomposing the diquark in terms of the two irreducible representations, so we can decompose diquark as 3 times 3 is equal to 6 plus the 3 bar. So that's what you would write down. All right. So now we're going to introduce this graphic technique called Young Tableau. So we can represent So in Young Tableau, you're drawing boxes, and those represent different indices. So if I draw a box like this, let me, for starters, I'm going to put the actual index in the box just to be a little more clear. And so let's say this has an index I. So this will be a fundamental representation with index I. Or I could write the same thing with index j. That's the same thing. Now, what we want to do is construct tensors involving these indices. And what you do is you just stack the boxes on top of one another in all possible ways that are allowed. So there's two ways to do it. One is I stack an I and a j vertically like this. This just means that I and j are contracted. I and j are anti-symmetric. And if I have them horizontal like this, this just means I and j are symmetric. So it's just a notation for telling you whether the indices are symmetric or anti-symmetric. All right. So now, when we start off with things in the fundamental representation, we can construct the irreducible representations just by finding all possible ways we can connect individual boxes. So we want to use a Young Tableau to find irreducible representations. So what you do is you just join the boxes in all possible ways consistent with these rules. So here are the rules. One, the length of the rows does not increase. From top to bottom. Two, the length of the columns does not increase. From, what is it, left to right. And three, no more than three boxes in a row. Sorry, in a column. Or for SUN, this three goes to N. So in general, for SUN, you can't have more than N boxes. In this case, N is just three. Okay, so these are the rules. And well, I'll give you kind of an intuitive way for just understanding why you have these rules. So let's use the rules to figure out the diquark representation. So diquark, we have a box, a fundamental, times another box, which is another fundamental with different indices. And I just want to join them together. I can put them together vertically. Or I can put them together horizontally like this. So that's what we get. These are where the two indices are contracted antisymmetrically. These are where they're contracted symmetrically. Now, what we want to do is figure out what these boxes correspond to in terms of the dimension of the representation. So what we want to do is count the dimension of a representation. So what you do is you just count the number of ways you can put the indices 1, 2, and 3 in the boxes. Subject to the rules. Indices in a row. Do not decrease. From left to right. And two, indices must increase in a column. From top to bottom. And again, when you're looking at the indices in a row, these are considering the symmetric indices. And these are considering, when you're looking at indices in the column, these are the antisymmetric indices. OK, so let's just go through how to do the counting. So let's just start off with the fundamental. Remember, I have an index I in here. That's the way I should think about it. And I just count the ways I can put in the index I, just 1, 2, and 3. So of course, there's just three possibilities. I have 1, 2, and 3. So I have a three-dimensional representation. Now I'll do this one here. Now I just count the possibilities. I can have 1, 2. I have 1, 3. And two, three. So again, there's three possibilities. It's a three-dimensional representation. Again, these are counting the antisymmetric indices, right? And for the antisymmetric indices, you should only count ones that don't vanish when you antisymmetrize, or ones that aren't the same as other ones when you flip the indices. So there's no reason to count like 1, 1 here, because that would vanish for the antisymmetric contraction. Or there's no reason to count 2, 1 here, because that one is the same as 1, 2 with a minus sign. And so these are the only independent combinations of the indices we should include. So that's why we have these rules that the indices must increase in the column from top to bottom, because that's the way correct way to count how many antisymmetric two-component objects we have. Now lastly, let's do this one here. And so we have 1, 1. We have 1, 2. We have 1, 3. We have 2, 2. 2, 3, and 3, 3. So again, it's the same thing, but we're considering the antisymmetrically contracted indices. So now we do need the ones that have the same here. But there's no reason to include like 2, 1, because that's just the same as 1, 2. And so this is the way to count the number of different indices we'd have in a symmetric object. OK. So now let's go to the meson. So that was the diquark. Diquarks aren't real, but we should consider the meson. So that's a Q and a Q bar. So this is a 3 for the Q, it's the fundamental. And then we have the anti-fundamental, which is this. So this is 3 times 3 barred. And now again, I want to use the rules for contracting all possible Young tableau that I can construct. So I can either put this one on the bottom here, or I can put it to the side. So these are the possibilities, like this. I can't put the one to the left here, because that would violate the rules that the columns must not increase from left to right. And I think that's it. So these are the only possible ways you can construct it. And now let's figure out the representations of these two things. So this one here. There's only one way I can write down this object. I have to have 1, 2, 3, because that's the only way the indices must increase as I go down. So this is actually a one-dimensional state. So this is actually just a singlet. It means it's invariant under the Flavor symmetry. And then the other one, I want to count all possible ways. So I could have 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 3, 3. And then I have 2, 2, 3, and then 2, 3, 3. And I think that's it. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh, I forgot one, didn't I? Which one? 1, 1, 3. Yep, 1, 1, 3. Great. So this is an eight-dimensional representation. So now here's the decomposition. 3 times a 3 bar is equal to a 1, the singlet, plus an 8, which is an octet. This is exactly the same reason. We're not talking about color, but this is exactly the same reason why we ended up having 8 gluons and not 9 gluons. We could have done the same thing for SU3 color instead of SU3 flavor. The gluons would be in this representation, but there's no gluon for this representation. So even though you're combining color, which is the fundamental, and anti-color, which is the anti-fundamental, you're only getting 8 gluons out because there's no singlet gluon to consider. Yeah.
How is this related to SUN? Why is it not ON, for example? Like, what makes this representation of the unit very special unit for the group?
Yeah, I don't actually know the answer to that. Does anyone know?
Because it seems to me like this is exactly what you do with tensors if you're in the Euclidean space, what Alex said earlier, and then you could just do this for ON as well.
Yeah, you probably can. I don't know exactly how it works. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just making an analogy because color is an SU3, flavor is an SU3, and so I could use Young Tableau to tell me something about color, even though I'm not talking about color here. But the gluon is comprised of, you can think about it as combining a fundamental and an anti-fundamental in color, and I get out a singlet and an octet in color, but the gluon only corresponds to the octet part. There's no singlet gluon, and so that's why there's 8 gluons instead of, naively, you would think there'd be 9, because there's 9 different possible combinations of color and anticolor you could write down. But there's a singlet combination, which doesn't correspond to any gluon. Only the octet is the gluon.
In gluon.
No, no. So this is like a color fundamental and an anticolor fundamental. So the gluon has 2 color indices, effectively. It has a color index and an anticolor index. So it's like red, anti-red, for example. And so I'm just saying that you can think about it in a similar way, and that's why we have 8 gluons. All right. So now let's do the baryon. It's a Q, Q, Q. So what we need to do is combine a fundamental, and another fundamental. So I told you how to, so we want to do a 3 times a 3 times a 3. And so that's 1, 3. And now we know already how to combine 2 of them. That's one like this, plus another one like this. So now we just have to combine this with this one and this one, just using assuming the distributive property holds, of course. So now we have, so for this one, I can put it either here or here, just like what we did for the meson. So I have one like this, plus one like this. This one, I can either put it here or here. And so again, I have another one like that. And the last one is I just have one like this. So now I can just count the dimension of the representations. This one, again, is the singlet. This one is, again, the octet. This one is another octet. This one, you can count how many you have. It's just 10. So we have a singlet, we have 2 octets, and then we have the decuplet, 10-dimensional representation. Oops. Okay. So this is just the flavor part of the quark wave function, so to speak. We also have to worry about the spin. We have to worry about the color. We have to worry about the spatial part of the wave function as well. So it gets more complicated. Let's start out by just considering the mesons. So for mesons, Q and Q bar are distinguishable. So we don't need to worry about having an antisymmetric wave function. Now let's see what we can compute about the properties of these mesons that fit into these representations. So what we're going to do is use something called the non-relativistic quark model. So what we want to do is treat Q, Q bar as the lowest lying state in a hydrogen-like potential. So I want to think about QQ bar as basically non-relativistic quantum mechanics, similar to what you do for the hydrogen atom. But we just don't know the potential, of course, so I'm not going to put in any potential. But you want to think about energy levels, you know, being characterized by N and L, things like that. So what I want is that the lowest lying mesons have a wave function with, let's say, n is equal to 0, and also like L is equal to 0, things like this. So the spin of the meson is just determined by the spin of the quarks. So the idea is, in the non-relativistic quark model, you're neglecting any angular momentum associated with the quarks and associated with the gluons. It's kind of a dramatic approximation. But it ends up working kind of well, although it seems very suspicious. Now, so let's consider the spin part of the wave function. We already have the flavor part. So let's use Young tableau to consider the spin part of the wave function. So what we want to do is apply the Young tableau to SU2, right? Spin is SU2. So what we're going to do is combine two spins. So what we have two fundamentals of spin. So this is like what you do in quantum mechanics, where you have two spin 1/2 states, and you want to combine them to produce states of total spin. So here would be like, this is like spin 1/2, comma ms cross 1/2, comma ms, ms1, ms2. Or I could have different z components of the spin for each. So this is what I'm doing. We have two spin 1/2 quarks, and so each of these representations by themselves are doublets. So this I should write as 2 times a 2. And I can write this. All I need to do is figure out, again, the ways I can stack these boxes. And again, it's just this plus this. Now, of course, the counting of the dimension of the representations is different for SU2. For this one, I can only have one possible way of putting in the indices. There's just 1 and 2. That's it. So this one is a singlet. This is like the S equals 0 state. And the last one, there's just 3 possible ways to write in the indices here. I can have 1, 1, 1, 2, and 2, 2. And so this is a triplet, which is like spin 1. So this is familiar, right, from quantum mechanics. Two spin 1/2s give us a spin zero, and a spin triplet, spin one. Okay, so in terms of the mesons, I'm combining two quarks with spin one half. I get two different states. One will have spin equal to zero, and one will have spin equal to one. Let me call, instead of S, I'll call J, just to keep the notation consistent with what I wrote down before for the spin of the mesons. So I expect a spin singlet meson and a spin triplet meson to appear. I should say a spin zero and a spin one. Now I can also consider the parity of these states as well. So for parity, one thing you have to remember is that a QQ bar pair has intrinsic parity minus one. If you remember from when you talked about parity in quantum field theory class, the Q and the Q bar had to differ in how they transform under parity by a minus sign. And so if I have both of them, I have to have this minus sign here. All right. So now I can think about the parity of a meson. So in general, for a meson, I should think about the parity as minus one to the L, like this. So it depends on the intrinsic parity of QQ bar, but it also depends on the spatial wave function. And so for the ground state with L equals zero, it should have a symmetric wave function. So it should just be minus one for L equals zero. All right. So lastly, we can also talk about color. The color wave function must be antisymmetric. And again, I'm combining, if I talk about SU3 color, I'm combining a fundamental and an anti-fundamental of color. So it has to be in this representation, like this. Singlet under SU3 color. So I'm using Young Tableau to tell us about the representations under flavor, under spin, under color, because they're all just SUN symmetries. Okay. So now let's go back to the meson states. So we have essentially four different possibilities. We could have either, four possibilities. We could have either the singlet meson and the octet meson under flavor, and we can have either singlet or triplet under spin. And so there's four possible ways to pick those things. So we can have a pseudoscalar octet or singlet, or a vector octet or singlet. Right? Because I can either pick the J equals zero, which is a pseudoscalar because it has minus parity, and it can have octet or singlet under flavor. Or I could pick the vector, which is J equals 1 minus parity. And that's either octet or singlet under flavor. All right. Oh, that's it. So let's just pick one of these cases, and we'll see what happens, how we can represent it. So let's take the octet representation. So This corresponds to a matrix with two indices. So I can write it as Mij. And it transforms as follows. So I can write it as Mij goes to UIK, UJL star, MKL. So this is how it transforms. Remember, because it has one fundamental index and one anti-fundamental index. Or I can write it in matrix form as just M goes to U, M, U dagger. So this should look familiar, of course. This is just the adjoint representation. Of SU3 flavor. So I can represent this matrix M using the generators of SU3, using the Gell-Mann matrices. So I'll use the generators. Of SU3 to represent M. So I can write M is MATA. TA is just the Gell-Mann matrix over 2. And if I just expand this out in components, you'll just see what it looks like. It's a 3x3 matrix, of course. There's M3 plus M8 over square root of 3. M1 plus IM2, M4 plus IM5. There's M1 minus IM2 minus M3 plus M8 over square root of 3. M6 plus IM7, M4 minus IM5. M6 minus IM7, and minus 2 square root of 3, M8. All right. So sorry, I'm just expanding this out to be very pedagogical. Each MA is, you know, an independent degree of freedom, but it's not useful to consider these degrees of freedom, right? These are not actually the physical particles that are going to correspond to the hadron states. So it's useful to take linear combinations of these to define the physical meson fields that we want to consider. And so I'm going to write it as follows. It's pi 0 over square root of 2 plus eta over square root of 6. There's pi plus. There's pi minus. There's k minus. Minus pi 0 over square root of 2 plus eta over square root of 6. There's k bar 0, there's k plus, k 0 minus 2 eta over square root of 6. So all I'm doing to define these fields is just taking the linear combinations of these. So it's might look like magic just to write this down, but it's just a definition.
It looks so magic. I mean, can you give me at least a sketch how you can get the class?
Let's just say I'm going to define, for example, k0 as m6 minus im7.
Like you can fairly define as.
You can define them to be anything you like. But now we'll see why this choice is useful. So, yeah, I'm almost done. I started a bit late, so let me just go a couple more minutes so you see how the argument finishes. So why did I define it in this way? Remember, for SU2, let me just make an analogy with SU2. SU2, you have a multiplet. It has different components, which have different values of T3, right? And so you're labeling your states by the different values of T3. For example, for the fundamental, where it's just spin 1/2, you have plus 1/2 and minus 1/2. That labels the different states. So you're labeling each state by its eigenvalue under the diagonal generators that you have for the group. So for SU2, there's only one diagonal generator, but for SU2, SU3, there are two. So we want to label the states by the diagonal generators T3 and T8. Since SU3 flavor, we're arguing it is an approximate symmetry of the strong interaction, the actual physical states should roughly follow exactly this labeling. So now I just want to show that that parameterization will pick out eigenvalues of T3 and T8. So for example, let's just consider the K0. What I want to do is just compute the commutator of T3 with just the K0 components. So this is how I act with T3 on something to pick out its eigenvalue in the adjoint representation. So this is just 1/2, and then the commutator of 1 minus 1, 0, with this thing here. And this is just equal to minus 1/2, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, k, 0, 0, 0, 0. So that picks out the eigenvalue, minus 1/2 under T3. Now let's do the same thing with T8. This is, so it's just the commutator of 1 over the square root of 3, 1, 1, minus 2, with the 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, k, 0, 0, 0, 0. And that picks out the T8 value, which is 1 over the square root of 3. Oh, wait, is it square root of 3 or 1 over square root of 3? No, it must be square root of 3. It's just this one. I wrote this down. Square root of 3. Sorry. You do it out at square root of 3. Times 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, k, 0, 0, 0, 0. And so you can do exactly the same exercise with all of those states, and you'll pick out the eigenvalues under T3 and T8. Okay. All right, so I'll have to continue this next time. All right, so what we're going to do next time is we're going to show how you get strangeness and isospin from these different eigenvalues here. So it'll correspond to labeling each of those states using this matrix by these quantum numbers will allow us to label all of those states by their isospin and by their strangeness. And then we can construct the Maison octet that we wrote down in the strangeness isospin plane and see that it satisfies the eightfold way construction. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow.